Welcome one and all to another episode of Left Turn Canada, part of the Harbinger Podcast Network. If you hadn't had a chance, check out some of those other left-wing shows. There's a whole bunch of new ones that have been added to the network, and right now is a good time to show your support. Yeah. Christo and I
had a lot of good new stuff, A lot of new good stuff. I think it was just announced today that there's three new shows, Darts and Letters. I was a guest on there. Podcast, the Rob Russo show, which has been going on for a while, but that is a Twitch show by Rob Russo, who's a up and coming Twitch streamer, and even a new show by Desmond Cole, which is
really?
Very interesting. Yeah, very very famous.
Yeah,
Canadian journalist and writer, wrote a best selling book, The Skin We're In, about Black Power and Black Resistance. So he's probably maybe the most famous name to join the Harbinger Network next to a bunch of nobodies like me and Andy.
There you
go. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I remember when I used to be somebody and worked radio and he had a show and I was doing news opposite him. I remember that. So that shows you. We're all in the same place, Desmond. So there you go. This week, we wanted to talk about a few things. We're still feeling that kind of post-election dip just a bit, but we had some big news from the Liberals and Trudeau. He announced his cabinet, so we're going to go through that. Doug Ford said some awful, awful things that we should be used to by now, so we're going to look into that. And there's some polling that shows here in Ontario that with kind of the weak Liberal footprint that we have right now, there's a good chance, maybe even a possibility, of the NDP finally coming through. So we're going to examine that. But the first thing I want to talk about with you today, Christo, was Trudeau's cabinet picks. We waited a while for them. Are there anything that's absolutely glaring looking at them right now? I don't see any names that are, you know, horrific, but I it does seem like he's moving around people that maybe made some mistakes, and he's trying to put in some others that don't have quite as much of a negative press at this point.
It's pretty on point. I mean, he had some juggling to do. Usually, whenever a new government gets formed, or even often in the middle of a government, a prime minister, a premier, whatever, will shuffle their cabinet, whether it's to remove underperformers, or whether it's to promote people, or whether it's just to sort of change the news cycle, you'll see it. But often, in a new government, it's an opportunity to do it. In this particular case, Trudeau really had to, because he lost multiple ministers. Three cabinet ministers lost their seats. Mariam Monsef, for example, just one of them, from Peterborough, lost her seat. And so by virtue, even if you didn't want to, you have to add someone new to cabinet to take her position. And so they lost three cabinet ministers, and they also had to compete or address competing needs. So for instance, Justin Trudeau wants to keep the gender balanced cabinet. And he lost multiple female ministers in particular, both through retirement and also defeat. But they also added new people from the West. They added seats in Calgary and things like that. But those seats were held by men. Now, you also want those people in cabinet, because when you win a seat in a new region, the Liberals didn't have very many seats in the prairies after their 2019 fallback. They want to put those people in cabinet, right? And so I think they did they did their best to juggle all of that. You saw some people drop out of cabinet, like Mark Garneau, who was in cabinet for Trudeau all the way back in 2015 and has been a longtime Liberal MP, one of the few Liberals that didn't lose their seat back in 2011. You see, I think, a couple pieces of disappointment. You saw some people hold on to jobs that I don't think they deserve to. For instance, Harjit Sharjan, the former defense minister, dealing with real scandals there.
Yeah, horrible.
A lot
stuff.
Of sexual harassment allegations. And yeah, he's been moved from that portfolio. You might call his move a demotion, but he's still in cabinet. And Carolyn Bennett, who did an abysmal job dealing with Crown Indigenous relationships.
Yeah, if we've talked about your name a couple times on this show and you're a Liberal minister, chances are you fucked up.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so Carolyn Bennett, most famously recently, sent that text to Jody Wilson-Raybould suggesting that Wilson-Raybould didn't want an election just so she could get her pension, basically calling her like a cheap, like, you know, Indian, basically, and, like, you know what I mean? Like, that, that feeding into a lot of uglier, yeah, like, a lot of racist tropes, got run through the cleaner for that, rightfully so, but she's still in cabinet. She's been moved to deal with mental health issues, because I guess that's another vulnerable group of marginalized people she can exploit and belittle. And so, like, I'm not super impressed. You know, the people who you might consider, like, quote-unquote lefties within the Liberal Party, like a, like, the member from Beaches East York and all these folks, you know, aren't in cabinet, because that's pretty typical. Justin Trudeau probably wouldn't want to give them any power. There was a minor controversy which didn't end up mattering, was that the new Liberal MP, former Green MP from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Jessica Atwin, who we spent a lot of time talking about, the Conservative Party, at least a few MPs from the Conservative Party, put out a letter specifically demanding that she be excluded from cabinet because of her remarks on Israel and Palestine. Wow. And that, you know, her quote-unquote anti-Israel position made her, you know, unqualified for any cabinet position. Now, she wasn't chosen anyway, but I think that was, like, very interesting that that was the line the Conservatives drew, when in reality, her position that she took was simply that Palestinians are human beings.
Yeah.
And then as soon as she joined the Liberal Party, she backed the fuck off that position, right? And she was like, actually, I don't really care about Palestinians all that much. Please, please, please. Yeah. Yeah. And so she's not in cabinet. I don't know if Justin Trudeau was going to play. I doubt it. Mm-hmm. I doubt that letter would have made a difference. I just don't think he was going to put her in cabinet, given everything else. But, I mean, the moves seem pretty typical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, Chrystia Freeland is where she is still. That would have been, like, the big thing. If Trudeau was going to make a massive shakeup, he would have shivved Chrystia Freeland or something. We didn't see anything like
it
that.
It does really seem like she is right now the heir apparent to the Liberal legacy at this point, right? Like, especially with her positioning now, like, it seems that position has been cemented for Freeland.
Well, yeah, there's a there's a few factors. One, her girl boss fascism is going to be very popular with Bay
Street. Nazi grandpa's important.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But more than that, there's a couple historical things. One, the Liberal Party is the only federal party, the only major federal party that has been exclusively led by white men.
Mm-hmm.
The Conservatives, at least via Kim Campbell, have been led by a woman. The Bloc by women. The NDP by multiple women and a man of color. The Greens, of course, have been led by women and people of color. You know, all of the parties have had some non-white maleness lead their party. The Liberals are the only one that haven't.
Man, that is wild, eh? Like, we should take a second on that. That's crazy at this point in time that still hasn't happened.
Yeah, the Liberals have been uniquely good for on the count of getting French Canadians to lead their party. And that's another factor, is that the Liberals usually will alternate between a French Canadian leader and a non-French Canadian leader. And there's no rule specifying it, but going all the way back to the early history, you know, you went from Laurier to Mackenzie King, and then from Mackenzie King to Louis Saint-Laurent, and from Saint-Laurent to Pearson, and from Pearson to Trudeau Sr., and from Trudeau Sr. to John Turner, although very briefly, and then from Turner to Chrétien, from Chrétien to Martin, from Martin to Ignatieff, I believe, to Dion, and then from Dion to Ignatieff, I think, was the last formal leader, and then the Trudeau, right? And Trudeau is a French Canadian. I know, like, you know, he's bilingual and all of that, but he's, like, you know, he's born and raised in Quebec, and, you know, he's a Quebec MP. Now, I guess the understanding would be now it's time for an English Canadian, and Chrystia Freeland has a seat in, like, downtown Toronto, and she's an Anglo-Canadian, right? So that would be, that's definitely where they're going. And, you know, often, you know, there's no official ranking, but often Minister of Finance is considered, like, the most important position.
Yeah.
And often Ministers of Finance find themselves, you know, in a position to run for prime minister. Paul Martin was a finance minister before he became prime minister. John Turner was a finance minister before he became Liberal leader. Jean Chrétien held a bunch of positions, one of which was finance minister.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely where they're going. Now, will it end up that way? No one knows for sure, but I don't see anyone else right now that that could beat her.
Mm-hmm.
Is my view. Yeah, who knows, right?
Yeah, they don't seem to be positioning anyone, at least at this point.
No.
There is some good news looking at all this, Christo. Just, I don't know if you're made aware, but apparently the middle class is now prosperous because we no longer have the Ministry of Middle Class Prosperity. So I guess the mission accomplished on that one. Boom.
Yeah,
there
that was the dumbest. That was the dumbest. Okay, so yeah, that was before we started the podcast.
It was,
but in the last parliament. So 25th, you know, Justin Trudeau wins re-election in 2019, and he creates a new portfolio position called the Minister for Middle Class Prosperity, which is supposedly about looking at the needs of middle class people and those looking to join the middle class, right?
Like,
just utter BS.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like it kind of matched the Liberal government's priorities, at least in a rhetorical sense. But from the beginning, Mona Forte, who's been promoted actually from that job to a position that is real and that is also bigger. But the idea that, you know, even the minister couldn't define what the middle class was.
Yeah, she was asked again and
like
again.
Like what
again
middle class prosperity was,
mm-hmm.
like what the objective in a sense was of her position. Because, like, look, like, I'm sure Statistics Canada has some kind of definition for middle class based on median and average income, blah, blah, blah. But in a rhetorical sense in Canada, the middle class literally means everyone probably from, like, outside the bottom and top 10% of income.
Yeah,
like, that's the middle class. And maybe even the bottom and top 5% of income.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 80 to 90% of Canadians are rhetorically middle class. So the job had no meaning. The job had no meaning.
Yeah, I'm even looking at an old interview that she had when she was really pressed on the point of like, so what about families that made between 100,000 to 200? Do those still apply? And she's again, at the time, very down the middle of maybe they do, maybe they don't. We need to work together. So it's just it furthers the ideology a lot that I think we need to kind of push away from, that everyone is just middle class. No one is really poor. There's only a few people who are really rich. So you don't really need things from your government because you're OK. And I think finally, maybe now it's just it's such a ridiculous irony in the times we live in now to have a middle class minister of prosperity that even Trudeau couldn't stomach it. It's very interesting to me, at least, that they didn't have this make work position.
It was just dumb. Yeah. It was just dumb. And like the Liberals can do what they can still. Trudeau can still pretend like he gives a damn about quote unquote middle class people without needing the position. You know, I'm not surprised they got rid of it.
Yeah, but that's good. Anyway, so in terms of all the ministers, it does seem, or the cabinet picks, it does seem like this is kind of business as usual, moving people around that you perhaps thought were going to be moved around. Friedland's in a position where, you know, she's definitely looks like that heir apparent. No big surprises, pretty much what we expected, right?
Yeah, more or less, more or less. Nothing shocked me, and nothing seemed to shock observers, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty standard.
So we are coming off of that election that we talked about, and you were pushing this interesting new poll that really looks at how First Past the Post like destroys Canadian politics in a big way. Like it was, it's fascinating when you look at like what our country, even in the last election, could have been if we had some tweaks to the system. Even if you're not someone that believes strongly in the value of even democracy as a value, but just wants like, I don't know, maybe your country to function a little more. Enlighten us. What was this poll that I was referring to here?
So this is a new poll from Nanos, which is one of the more reputable pollsters. They did a pretty decent job in the last election. I believe they weren't as good as Legere, but they were quite decent. And what the poll shows is that the NDP is up like 6 points almost since the last election. Now, keep in mind, we're talking federal here, and we're talking about the fact that the election happened in like September, and like nothing has really happened in federal politics since the election, despite Justin Trudeau saying this was like the most urgent point in Canadian history. Cabinet was just announced like yesterday. Liberal caucus apparently hasn't met. Like Liberal MPs haven't heard from Justin Trudeau. He's basically just like ghosting them, right? Like Parliament isn't back yet. All of this, right? And so this poll shows that the, you know, the conservatives and liberals are down 2.9 and 2.7% respectively to 30.8 and 29.9. And the NDP is up 5.3 to 28.1. And some minor movement for the Bloc, PPC, and Greens. No major movement for those parties. Mm-hmm. Bloc down, Greens and PPC up. But the reality is, like, look, maybe Singh has been effective in the media in the last month and a bit, but, like, I got to feel that people aren't paying attention.
Yeah.
And what this tells me very clearly is, like, these are people that were going to vote NDP and then voted Liberal, and now that the election's over, or maybe voted Conservative in some ways too, but are now back at the NDP. Like, because there's no rationale. Like, yeah. I'm not trying to crap on Jagmeet, but, like, he hasn't done anything in the last month to earn 5% support increase. He just hasn't. Mm-hmm. So the only rational explanation is these are people who, you know, were strategic voters, but honest about it. And when Nanos and all the, when people were polled on the day of the election, voted and now are honest and saying, I'm actually an NDP supporter. And so, yeah.
I think it's really fascinating how this has kind of become a snapshot of this Canadian moment, where there is enough people that are willing to say publicly, perhaps more now than ever, that they support the NDP and the goals of the NDP. Is that because those goals, you know, are more in line with what people need in this moment? Possibly, but it could just be, you know, just the general changing times, as it were. So that is there. People are willing to say that they support this party and they want to see the things that this party believes in actually happening. But we still can't break that idea that we need to be supporting the winner, that it is always Liberal and Conservative. So even if you believe, even if you're not as, you know, connected to this, I think there is a general consensus among certain groups of people that the NDP is a good party to, I think that was all right, I didn't do the double there, to support publicly. But when it comes to actually casting your ballot, I don't know how we break this idea that the Liberal Party will have this stranglehold and is the only way to possibly beat conservatives. Like, I was, again, had a little celebration over the last week and got to talking politics. And it was amazing the groups of people that will support everything that the NDP believes in. But when asked who they voted for, it was Liberal, simply because they wanted to vote for the person that wins. They live in downtown Toronto, so they figured, why not? But when asked what you would need to push them NDP, surprisingly, a lot of the answers were like, no, NDP seems great. Like, I don't really, there's nothing really that they could do. It seems to work. So this lock here of what people want to be seen as voting for and what they actually believe in and what they will vote for, like, it seems like this is deep rooted in Canadian culture. And I don't know if we're going to see that change, man. What do you think?
Well, there's a few factors here. Some of these people, like, let's say there are some people, and again, maybe we agree with them, maybe we disagree with them, but they're, like, they're well-informed strategic voters.
Yeah.
And if you live in, like, Oakville, where the, like, let me look this up, Oakville.
Let's see.
Riding. The Oakville electoral district in the last election went Liberal, and the NDP, 46 to 40, the NDP only got 8.8% of the vote. Now, if you're a good faith strategic voter, you might say to yourself, I am an NDP guy or an NDP person, whatever, and I live in Oakville, but I don't want to see the Conservative win, so I'm going to vote Liberal, right? Like, this is not a riding the NDP. Even in 2011, even during the Orange Wave, the NDP finished third in this riding. Mm-hmm. That's how not NDP Oakville is. It's a rich riding, blah, blah, blah. And so the reality is that those people exist. Now, in other cases, there are people that are just, they're uninformed strategic voters.
Yeah.
They are voting, they look at the top line numbers, see the Conservatives and Liberals relatively close, as it ended up being. Conservatives actually got a few more votes in the popular vote. And the NDP, you know, lagging behind, feeling that, okay, I need to see the Liberals win this, so I'm going to vote Liberal regardless of where I live. Maybe I live in a riding where the Conservatives are going to win anyway. doesn't matter. Maybe I live in a riding that's orange versus blue. Doesn't matter. They're going to vote liberal simply because they look at the top line national numbers and not the regional or riding specific numbers. And then you also have some people, and I think we could talk more about this, and maybe we should, that vote based on like the parliamentary math. And some people in downtown Toronto, and I think Angela McEwen, who ran for the NDP in Ottawa Centre, that riding didn't end up being all that close, but it was a riding the NDP had a shot in because we hold it provincially with Joel Harden, where she said some people told her that they were voting strategic because they didn't want the Conservative to win, and those people just didn't understand that the riding is not accessible to the Conservatives. But then some other people said, I need to vote Liberal here because that seat going to you increases the likelihood that the Conservatives will have more seats than the Liberals, and I don't trust the Liberals to cooperate with you to form a coalition. Mm-hmm. So they're actively rewarding the Liberals' cynicism. That's their calculation, because the calculation is hypothetically is like all that matters is orange plus red equals more than the Conservatives, right? Yeah. So downtown Toronto, some people might have said, well, I'm going to go vote for Spadina for York or in Davenport where they were very close races. Some people might say, I'm going to go vote Liberal because I believe in the Liberals, or I'm going to go vote Liberal because I don't want the Conservatives to win this riding and I'm a dumb and I don't understand how it works. Or they said, look, I want the Liberal to win this seat because I need Justin Trudeau to have more numbers than Aaron O'Toole. And if this seat goes orange, that increases the likelihood of O'Toole having more seats than Trudeau. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that the NDP has to look at, because it seems like the more unwilling Justin Trudeau is to cooperate with the NDP, the more it encourages strategic voting, even in orange-red ridings, against the NDP. And I think that's a challenge, because again, like, I don't know how many people are that advanced in their strategic voting methodology.
Yeah.
I think that most people are either vote to stop Conservatives in their riding, or just vote Liberal to stop Conservatives regardless of it's needed. I don't know if people vote with the expectation that they want to look at the parliamentary math.
Yeah, but that's
a thing though, right? Angela said that she met people at the doors saying that. So it's probably a minority position, but not necessarily an infinitesimal one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're looking at all three of those, you know, hypothetical voters that we conjured here, which I think are very real, like that seems to cover a lot of the spread here. My money would be on, earnestly, the largest demographic would be those that are fortunate enough in which they don't need to consider politics all the time and just have this general consensus of, you know, Liberals are the ones who are winning. They're kind of the good guys. I'm going to vote Liberal. Getting to those people, that demo, I think, is much more achievable than trying to convince the other two that, you know, the NDP might be a better push for Canadians. What do you think? Because it is important. Like, this is the only way the NDP will get to that position of forming a government. The votes need to come from somewhere. It's either from people that aren't voting or these people that we just mentioned here. So, you know, if we were strategizing, if we were trying to think about it, what would be, just some ideas? Let's brainstorm here, Crystal. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Turnout is important. I mean, in this election, there was limited success with that. Look, it wasn't as good as it should have been or could have been. There were voter suppression issues. I'm not trying to be conspiratorial and suggest it was, a direct plot against the NDP, but Indigenous people, young people, students, poor people often lost certain accessibilities to voting that existed in previous elections. Mm-hmm. But the NDP, except for the PPC, of course, the NDP are the only party represented in Parliament that actually got more raw vote than they did in the last election. The Liberals, Conservatives, Bloc, and Green all lost popular vote. They all lost popular vote relative to the last election. And so there was an increased turnout in a decreased turnout context for the NDP, right? Like, you know, overall. Mm-hmm. But and so, yeah, part of the NDP success is going to have to come from increased turnout. Like, if they really want to have a massive breakthrough. But there was an interesting article in Canadian Dimension a couple weeks ago now, which made the argument that the NDP maybe needs to be more honest with people about the electoral strategy. And I'm not 100% sold on this necessarily, but there's the narrative that NDP leaders, like conservative and liberal leaders, are running to be prime minister.
Mm. I remember we talked about this, Krista. We were going back and forth on this idea a little bit.
Maybe we've talked a bit about this, but the argument has to be, maybe you have to make an honest pitch to people and say, look, like, maybe those orange red, you know, like, we gotta, the liberals can't be below the conservatives in the parliamentary seat count. Those people exist, but I think in general, you'll maybe be more successful in saying, look, my goal is to win 50 seats. You give me 50 seats and I give you these progressive policies or something, right? And you can go to people and say, look, I'm gonna be honest with you. We're not gonna win very many seats in rural parts of the country, unless they're, you know, in rural north areas where there's, you know, an industrial working class base and indigenous communities and whatnot. But I'm gonna need support of progressive Canadians in downtown Toronto, in Halifax, in Vancouver, in all of these places to hold both the liberals and conservatives to account. I don't know if that strategy is gonna work. Honestly, I'm not sure. But it's probably the more honest strategy, because if you look at it right now, if you look at that polling, you know, the NDP would still be in a distant third, even if the NDP was able to rack up that 23-24% on E-Day, they likely would have won their 40 seats or 35 seats. But, you know, they're not forming government with that. So they would still need to find a way to get to that next level. And I think you need to build a more consistent base around, you know, what your potential role is in parliament. And just first past the post.
Yeah.
Unless you're banking on another 2011 style liberal collapse combined with, you know, the conservatives not having a good campaign so that you can actually win, that might never come.
Yeah, I really do think this idea is a really persuasive one for the type of leader that the NDP has now and those types of voters that we were talking about that kind of just need permission to allow the consensus to be, you know, Jagmeet knows he's likely not going to be prime minister. That's not what he's trying to do. He's trying to make Canada more progressive. And the way he can do that, like you said, is to get those seat totals. I really do think that for that voter, and I think it's not an insignificant part of the population that usually just votes following the waves of consensus, still wants to vote, still wants to be progressive, but they're likely voting liberal because, you know, liberal is the person to vote for, the team to vote for. I think that would be persuasive enough to maybe change a vote. It's not like they're voting necessarily for the loser, which I think is really an issue for some voters. I think that's really
Head. That's where it gets to that. Whether they're thinking about it in terms of like, I don't need if the liberals have 149 seats, I need to get them to 150 because they got to be ahead of O'Toole. But I think you're right. Just in a sense, people look at the top line numbers and say, there's two parties that can win this. There's the liberals and conservatives, but they're treating it like a U.S. style presidential election where they're literally only one person can be president and not as a parliamentary election where, you know, a smaller party might not win the whole shebang, but can make a big difference if they go from 20 seats to 40 seats.
I think Canadians and I think want you're that, right. too. Like, I think they want a minority government. I think most Canadians.
Well, right now, certainly they do right now. Like, I mean, look, Canadians. It's hard to say, and again, sometimes did the Canadians want to give the Liberals a majority in 2015? We don't know, right? Like, was that the intent? Like, you'll never really know necessarily. Like, if that election happened 5 days earlier, Justin Trudeau probably wins, but maybe he doesn't win a majority. But clearly right now, given that that election changed almost literally nothing, in like the broad part, like, you know, seats were won and lost by different people, whatever, like that matters, but like there was almost no change, I think, indicating that Canadians were fine with the status quo for now, right? And probably a little ticked off at the Liberals, which maybe explains in part why Justin Trudeau, his you know, in that Nanos poll, he's dipped 3% again, with seemingly nothing happening since the last election.
So it's great to talk about this, and I think there is some really interesting methods that could be used. Because how many times, Krista, have we sat here and thought, you know, what could be the big policy that will push voters out there that the NDP could have? Like, we talked a lot about it. They needed to be more clear on a lot of things, but there are a lot of regular Canadians out there that will never even get to that point when considering who they're going to vote for. As much as we do want to discuss the importance of these policies, it's just about the general consensus. So in the way that our structure is set up, I put a lot of faith in this idea that Jagmeet could be the guy that comes out and says, this is what we need. If we have an election, what, in another year, year and a half, maybe 2 years, I think that could be a winning policy, because he did, in my opinion, a pretty great campaign. There are things he could have pushed better, but the messaging was hit really hard. And if he wasn't able to push Canadians based on the advocacy for Indigenous people in Canada against the Liberal record of fighting them in court, if he wasn't able to pull in their heartstrings in that way and trying to really, you know, say we need to do better and showing how, I don't know how we're ever going to get to that point. So I think it's a big one, man.
I do think, like, there's something like we've talked about this, you know, but like, you know, student loans, you gotta almost bribe your base a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the conservatives do it with tax cuts all the time. Like, vote for us and we're going to give you money if through tax cuts. The liberals bribe seniors, basically.
Yeah.
Saying, here, we just gave you like this big check for senior citizens.
Culture
like
war
500
stuff.
$500. Like, yeah, whatever. It's like, so you got to bribe your voters a little bit. And I think the NDP needed to do that. They needed to say to the people that Singh was clearly targeting, like, it's not controversial, young people, hey, you guys have a fuck ton of student loans.
Mm-hmm.
It's bullshit. We're going to cancel $15,000 of everyone's student loans day one, NDP government. Put it in the bank.
Yeah.
And if, like, it's a minority government, we're going to make this a priority in negotiations with whoever forms the government. And so we need the seats to make that happen. Help us make that happen. Come out and vote. But what we got was, like, you know, you can cancel 14. I'm trying to do like a nerd, you know, cancel 14% of student loan policies after 6 months if family income does not, you know, it's and that's why Singh didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. That's why he didn't talk about it. And he was right not to, because it was bad policy. But even if it wasn't bad policy, it was unconveyable policy. And so, mm-hmm. Look, there's a lot of criticisms of the campaign. I still would give Singh another go. Like, we're not having that debate now, but yeah. I don't think he needs to go as leader or anything like that. But he didn't run a perfect campaign. And I do think that there were things that could have been done better. But you are right in noting that there are some fundamental challenges baked into the system that are beyond any one NDP leader or any one NDP campaign. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, it's the stuff we talk about here every week. Like, it's made to ensure that we will not see Jagmeet as prime minister. It's made to ensure that there is this dichotomy of these two major parties. And it's not what Canadians want. It's not the ideals that I think when we see all these major pollings of what Canadians believe in. They believe in these NDP policies. So there's everything is kind of stacked against you. And I feel like once Trudeau shuffles away and we get Friedland, I'm worried that we won't be able to have these opportunities again, because I think
that's
a lot
true.
Of the stink of Trudeau will be gone, and a lot of that, you know, more progressive support. Finally, it's a woman who's leading these ideals that even are not that progressive, but, you know, she's saying all the right things. I'm concerned that we might be missing our moment if the NDP doesn't do something big this next go around. And there's no real indication that that's going to happen. So not to be, you know, negative with that, but there is a concern.
I mean, she could fuck it up though, right? Everyone thought Ignatieff was going to be great.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Look, I think Freeland will probably be more effective than Ignatieff, but she could fuck up. She could, right? Like, Justin Trudeau, at least at first people did like him. I can see why people like Trudeau. He's got a good charisma. I don't know if Freeland has. Freeland, I think, is seen as like a competent woman, very like accomplished.
Kamala Harris energy, really, is what I get from her.
Yeah, and so, but like, look, even the polling. There was polling today. Same old shit, man. Like polling from yesterday. Excuse me. O'Toole -19, Trudeau -6, Singh +22.
Jesus,
like, you know what I mean? So, like, the answer isn't get rid of Singh, but it's like, how do you convey, like, the need to make him more powerful, right? Mm. And the way you make him more powerful is, yeah, make him prime minister, of course, but, like, make him a true kingmaker. And the only way you make him a true kingmaker is you got to convince orange-red swing voters to give their red seats to the NDP. It still keeps Justin Trudeau or Chrystia Freeland or whoever as the effective prime minister, but, you know, not with the same carte blanche, and not even now where they can go to the bloc every now and then. You'll never have a situation where the NDP can be true kingmakers, because the Liberals could always hypothetically just go to the Conservatives.
Yeah,
right?
They
could
always which they do.
But if you force them to keep doing that, they're often reluctant to do that too often, because it's it rips the mask off a little bit too much.
Yeah, it ruins the pantomime.
They'd much rather get votes from the NDP or bloc if they need to, because you know, their base doesn't like to hear the, you know, the liberal Tory same old story. They do not like when that is proven to be true.
So I guess bottom line, this is this idea of, you know, next election kind of pushing this message of the NDP realizes, you know, they're not going to form government. That's not what we're here for. We are truly going to make Canada more progressive. We have very strong ideals. We have very strong policies, and we're going to push whatever government it is to ensure that this happens. You know, what do you think are the chances right now, October 2021, of that actually being in the literature and the general consensus? Because I think it's not likely to happen, but I'm putting my money behind it being very successful if it does. Where are you putting your money, Christo?
I don't know. I mean,
you gotta gamble. Come on, just a gamble.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't want to. We don't know what it's gonna be like in 2 years, honestly. Like, are we gonna have COVID-20? Like,
yeah, you know what I mean? That's a good point.
Like. You know, is it Trudeau? Is it Freeland? Is it someone else? Is it still O'Toole for the Conservatives? Is it someone else? I'm pretty confident Jagmeet will be around in 21. I have a good feeling. Like, do the Greens pick a Lascaris that adds a new challenge to the NDP from the left, or at least hypothetically does? Like, what of the PPC? What of the PPC? Does the PPC fade back to where they were pre-COVID because, you know, there's clearly a base for far-right politics in Canada, but part of their success this time was general, like, anti-lockdown stuff. Yeah. And some of those people are not homophobes, racists, whatever. That was just their most important issue, and they were willing to align with the racists and homophobes this one time. Will they be willing to do so if COVID is done and dusted? So, I mean, I don't know. You make predictions 2 years out, you go broke.
All right, I'm spending my money on my lonesome. All right, so we'll see what happens. As always, it's always interesting to look at these numbers. The one thing that we can say very strongly, and I think we can put our money behind this idea, the Canadian system of governance and how our politics is set up is designed to ensure that certain people are on top, and that is not going to change just by one, like you said, one campaign or one leader. It's systemic issues that are apparent in all of every facet of our society. But when it comes to how we form a government, you know, there needs to be big changes, and changes that you've talked about here a lot. So there's something that we haven't seen change, unfortunately, despite the fact that he has fucked up, maybe not the most, but pretty close to
right
the
up
most.
There. Probably top three. I mean, it's hard, right?
It's because hard. There's a lot of fuck-ups.
Like, he's got a lot of competition from Kenny and from Mo and even from Blaine Higgs in New Brunswick now and then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's in the competition for biggest fuck-up.
And, of course,
we're talking about Doug Ford. Talking about Doug Ford. Yep.
Let's talk about what he did in the last few weeks. So if you recall, he has always said horrible remarks. I remember when he was running for mayor of Toronto after Rob had to step out, and he was kind of picking up that campaign. The absolute unbelievable instances of just racial insensitivity. I was covering one of his events once when I was a reporter, and he was talking to a room of Jewish leaders and constituents and these great people of faith, of the Jewish faith. And he yelled proudly, "Some of my best friends are Jews. They're all lawyers and accountants." And he was booed out of the rooms. But he still didn't apologize. So. Yeah.
It's almost like Donald Trump, basically, where he said similar remarks about Jewish, maybe a little bit worse than that. But yeah, it's almost like unbelievable. It's like something you'd see in Veep or something, like in a political comedy show where you're supposed to like cringe at it, right?
And he refused to apologize then. He absolutely refused to apologize then. That was years ago.
To, maybe to be fair to Doug Ford, maybe he was being honest to his personal experience. I don't know.
Well, listen, that he's saying the same sort of shit right now. So within the last 10 days, he was at an event and he was talking about this recovery effort and ensuring that Ontario gets on the right track when he decided it was important to say this.
You come here like every other new Canadian has come here. You work your tail off. If you think you're coming to collect the dole and sit around, not going to happen.
So, that's our premier being the type of racism that when a grandparent does it, you have to roll your eyes and like move them out of the room you're sitting in because you don't want, you know, that to rub off. It's just... Yeah. It's especially sickening considering what Ford did during the pandemic to a lot of these great immigrant cities like Brampton, my hometown, that he directly, there's so much proof of this, after he intersided with lobbyists, he made choices that led to certain manufacturing corporations staying open and people dying. Despite the fact the medical community was saying something else, the business community, the people that owned these factories wanted people in there. They didn't want the same type of protections, and a largely immigrant population had more COVID cases than perhaps anywhere in the country. There's that like 2 month period, month and a half, where Brampton and specifically the manufacturing sector was hit hard. And for him to say this afterwards, after Brampton immigrants fucking died because of his choices. Yeah. Like it makes your blood run red.
And then when they were vilified often by him and in the media for being, and even like Patrick Brown, that fucking ghoul had to come out and be the voice of reason where he's don't shit talk my town. Yeah. Like we're the ones keeping this country running right now. Like as everyone ordered, like as you and I and so many others stayed home and ordered everything. Even things that we used to go to the store for. It's sickening. It's so, like the Don Cherry thing. We were talking about this, if people remember last year, the year before, Don Cherry came out and did that thing on Hockey Night in Canada where he was basically like, they don't sing the national anthem. These people, they come to our country. They're all the new immigrants. They don't love our country. They just come for the milk and honey and they're not loyal.
That's it. Yeah.
He's like, you know, you go to the small towns and of course he's not mentioning necessarily skin tone and all of that, but you go to the small towns in like the rural parts of the country and he's not talking about indigenous reserves, you know what I mean? Like he's talking about white, like Whitesvilles.
Yeah.
And he's like, these people love our country. And Ford sounded like that, where he was like, we want immigrants right now. We want them to come in and help suppress wages, I suppose. Don't be bringing any lazy immigrants now, right?
Yeah, we want them to be enslaved. Yeah. Make sure you understand that.
And like, again, both in Canada and the United States, immigrant populations are hardworking. Yeah. They are less likely to be criminals. They are less likely to be quote unquote drains. And I'm not accusing anyone of being a drain, but, and they're like the Fordian definition, they are less likely to be like quote unquote drains on the social
dole,
welfare system.
As he said, on the dole. What is he at? 98 years old, man?
Exactly. He's like, sounds like a Newfoundland, like a senior from Newfoundland. I don't know, man. Like, it was really bad. It was bad even for Ford.
Yeah.
Like, it was bad even for Ford. Yeah.
So like, you think he would have any sort of awareness, but the days that followed, he was called out by everyone that you could imagine. Every sort of party leader said this was the wrong thing to do. But the most egregious instance, I think, had to be last week when a Bramptonese MPP.
Gurtan Singh. Yeah, it's Jugmeet's brother. Jugmeet's younger brother.
Jugmeet's brother calls him out and says that this is a racist stereotype about new Canadians. It's hurtful, divisive, and wrong. He is facing this man, and I almost said Trudeau. Ford had the audacity to say that, oh, listen, I've been inundated with messages from the Sikh community that said I was bang on, and told Singh to go to his community, knock on doors, and see for yourself. Like, he's tripling down on the racism when a person of color that he was originally calling out and saying that these people are racist, now then saying, oh, listen, you're talking to the wrong Sikhs. There's good ones that you need to talk to. It's just, it's beyond the pale a little bit, and it's not going to stop him. And that is the even more depressing thing, because I think there's enough people in Ontario that heard what Ford said. There was, headlines in the National Post that were supporting him, saying that he shouldn't apologize. Like, there's enough people in this province that heard what he said and thought, yeah, that's what we don't need the bad. Go ahead.
Well, no, if you think about it though, let's think, one, we've talked about this. Often people won't classify their vote on any one particular issue, especially when that issue is seen as like affecting minority populations.
Yeah.
Blackface didn't seem to hurt Trudeau all that much. Maybe it hurt him a little bit, but even people that were unhappy with it maybe didn't always change their vote. They were unhappy with it and they weren't going to vote for Trudeau anyway. They were unhappy with it and they were like, well, I'm still going to vote for Trudeau because despite the fact that he did blackface, maybe he apologized for it and I still think he's the best or least worst option. And so there's the reality that, like, this might not move a lot of voters because maybe the people that are most offended by this were already not voting for Ford. Mm-hmm. And you also have to deal with the reality that, at least hypothetically, Ford doesn't need to make a majority of Ontarians happy. Ford won an absolute majority government with well under 40% mm-hmm. of Ontarians, right? If you go back to the 2018 Ontario election results.
Man, another example of how great our country is.
He got 40.5% of the vote. So he got about 41%, still way under the average. Mm-hmm. And so he could think to himself, look, if 60% of the province hates my fucking guts, but the other 40% likes me, or at least is tolerating me enough to vote for me, I can be premier for 20 years in a multi-party first-past-the-post system.
Jesus Christ. Right?
And so maybe he thinks to himself, okay, well, this isn't going to hurt me. Now, to be fair, though, I don't know if that's 100% true. Because if you look at where Ford, maybe not where he won his government, but where he won his majority, there are a lot of immigrant communities that may not be happy with what he said, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not a guarantee necessarily that, Ford finds himself without any consequences here, because maybe there are immigrant communities who are like, everyone I know from my Sikh community, from my Pakistani community, from my, Chinese Canadian community, all of us work extremely hard and there's basically no one who's lazy. And the implication that some immigrants are going to be lazy is deeply offensive. Mm. But I don't know, right? I don't know if that's the case.
He did answer that by saying that, the good immigrants are part of Ford Nation. That was his kind of answer. Yeah, so I am concerned about that, that being the narrative.
And look, I can speak to this somewhat. My family is all white, but my dad was an immigrant, and often immigrants can have anti-immigrant animus, mm-hmm. right? You know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't be shocking to me for immigrants sometimes to be hostile to immigrants who come after them. That is not without precedent. And so you're right that some, of course, I think Ford there is just talking out his ass because he wants to defend his remarks. But there probably are some people of color, immigrants, new Canadians, or children of new Canadians, what have you, who do agree with what he said and just think that he's not talking about anyone they know and he's not talking about their community, but the other communities. And this is where you get into specific racism against, say, Black and Indigenous people, which is often shared in some cases by other non-white communities. And that's where it gets kind of ugly, right?
Man,
and I don't think we're the people to talk about that.
Yeah, of course not. But we can say that he is absolutely despicable human being that continuously shows us he is much more mask off than any federal politician that I've seen. So it is perhaps
other than Bernier.
Other than Bernier, yes.
Who,
but
he's been arrested for not wearing a mask.
There you go. So I think that it is more, the most upsetting thing about this is that we have seen this man time and time again say horrific things, do things that lead directly to the deaths of Ontarians solely to support his position politically and his ambition. And the only way that we might see him, you know, not be premier for 20 years is if the economy really fucks up. Like, that is likely the only way. If there is like a real, if we have another economic collapse in the next year or so, maybe that'll push him out. Because like, maybe if we had the election, 6 months ago when he was at his worst.
Yeah, like timing matters, right? Like if like he was elected in 2017 and we had, you know, a 2021 election, either it was in the summer or it's now or whatever, then yeah, it might be different. It might be different for him. Although who knows, he could have a major scandal again that only hits, you know, late this year, early next year, in which case a 2021 election would have bailed him out because he would have been able to kind of absorb that scandal right after an election instead of right before one, right? But no, I mean, like, one thing to be said is that, like, the polling for him isn't as good as it used to be. Like, I shared a poll with you, which is also encouraging for NDP supporters because it shows a couple things. One, it is a recent poll showing that the NDP is in second again in Ontario. Again, many of the polls have had the NDP in third behind the Liberals again. Just, you know, people maybe going back to their old habits. But this poll suggests a relatively close race where the Greens are at 4, other 5, Liberals 25, Ontario NDP 32, and the Ford's Conservatives PCs at 34, meaning that Horwath and the ONDP are within the margin of error of catching Ford in at least in this poll. So, you know, Ford's re-election is not ordained. One, we don't necessarily know where his polling will be, and two, we don't know if and to what extent the NDP and Liberal vote, whether it's behind the NDP or Liberals, will coalesce and how effective that is. And Ford got 40% last time, and so that was obviously a good result for him. Mm-hmm. But one thing is that the Ford vote, in addition to that, was quite efficient last time. And if he sees potentially, say, a suburban slip back, he might lose some vote efficiency, which could hurt him, right?
Think that with the immigrant communities that are in these suburbs, you do think that these, you know, comments might have some sort of an effect, right? Like, considering that's, you know,
I mean, one thing we would need to see is some regional polling, and we do get that in Ontario. It's a big enough province. Often in provinces, you don't always get sub-regional polling. Sometimes in BC, for instance, you'll get some. And, you know, but, you know, in Manitoba, they'll do like a poll and they'll split it up basically being like, are you in Winnipeg or are you not in Winnipeg? You know, things like that. But, you know, you could, like, maybe we'll see if there's specific 905 polling, if there's specific, you know, 905 excluding Hamilton polling, which is sometimes done. Hamilton has kind of given its own thing because it's technically 905 area code, but it's sort of distinct from the rest of the 905 politically.
I wonder if we'll see Horvath pushing the message that a vote for the Liberal Party is actually a vote for the Conservatives and Doug Ford. I wonder if that...
I mean, you'll definitely see that strategic mindset happening if it benefits the parties. So, for instance, the right now, if that poll is to be believed, and if that becomes the trend, then you're darn right that Horwath is going to do that, right?
Now, do you think Liberal voters would ever do that, though? Like, that's the thing.
Well, I mean, they do in some cases, right? Now, whether they'll do it enough is quite the question.
Yeah.
But I know that here in Kingston, again, a city often plagued by dumb strategic voters. I could say that Kingston is the dumbest city. That is the most educated city in this country. And I say that as a highly educated Kingstonian. Mm-hmm. People just voting for the Liberals out of strategy all the time. And that in that election, in part because the NDP here locally in Kingston has really been building capacity and racking up a lot more second place finishes, beating the Conservatives, really demonstrating to people that not only can the Conservatives not win here, but that if, even in a fluke election, if the Liberals lose, it'll be to the NDP, so no worries. We got people who told us they were Liberal voters voting for the NDP in Kingston.
Yeah.
We got that. So there are some good faith strategic voters who generally vote Liberal, but may vote for the NDP or the Greens, even whatever. Maybe that's what happened in Kitchener, to stop a conservative, right? Like, there are some. You won't find those people on social media because often they'll call for strategic voting. But then when you go through their history, they'll be like, I never vote for the NDP. And I live in like Edmonton, where the NDP is the only party that can win except for the conservatives, just coming out and taking the mask off. But no, it can happen. Like, what happened in the last election, if you recall, is that, Horwath had a very good first debate. There was a debate on City TV. It was on Toronto issues in particular, but it was billed as like the first leaders debate. And Horwath had a really good debate, and Kathleen Wynne was unpopular, and the Liberals had been in power for a long time. And what became clear at that point, in addition to some polling showing it was already kind of close, was that the NDP quickly established itself in second place. And that led to a lot of people shifting to the NDP. And so what's going to be crucial in this election, I think, and this is maybe one of the reasons why Del Duca is pushing this ranked ballot thing, is someone's going to take the mantle as the not Ford candidate. Yeah. And it's not a guarantee who it's going to be. Because unlike Justin Trudeau, who can be the anti-O'Toole candidate sort of automatically by virtue of the fact that he's already premier, in Ontario it's a toss-up, because on the one hand the Liberals are decimated, right? Like they're not an official party. Very few of their, like, they don't have a lot of like really big experience. Del Duca isn't well known, and what he is known for is often being associated with the still unpopular Kathleen Wynne. But on the other hand, they are like considered like the natural governing party of the province. And so Horwath has a lot of advantages given that she is the leader of the opposition. And so there's no guarantee. Like, it's like 2015. There's an alternative history where Justin Trudeau, you know, fucks up the first debate, and Tom Mulcair establishes himself as the non-Harper candidate and wins. Like, that there is a path there, right? It's possible.
Maybe, right? It is, think, entirely, yeah, on Doug Ford's absolutely ludicrous planning of the next 6 months of Ontarians' lives, that March, no more masks. Like, I think maybe that could be his ultimate fuck up, because that idea of like what we've seen in this province during the pandemic, and how it has not been something that can be charted in these ways unless you strictly adhere to what medical professionals are saying. And unfortunately, you know, political leaders don't tend to do that. I think that could be the thing. But I really do believe that it's just a push so that he can, you know, rip a mask off and say, look what we did. We got through it. Now let's build. You need conservatives to build up. But if that fucks up, if that doesn't happen, I think that could be, a bit of a linchpin possibly.
One thing he's doing, and if you've seen heard some of the ads on radio, is he's trying to take like a positive message. Like, we're the party of yes. The NDP and the Liberals. I don't even think he mentioned the other parties by name, but he said, you know, they're the parties of like controlling you and all of this. We're the party of opening up. We're the party of getting back to business and all of that. And so maybe he'll try to spin it as like a positive message. Like, you know, we were effective during COVID, whether it's true or not. And now it's like, we're the party to reopen this province. You know, we're going to be, you know, cautious yet, you know, assertive, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that message will work. I don't know.
Yeah, man. So it is interesting to see there is some hope, and that's always what we like to finish off.
One good thing here. There's been some good NDP polling in some other provinces, which we maybe highlight, which is always nice to see.
Orange wave happening.
Well, look, I think what we can do is guarantee that every province will be orange in the next 3 years. I think we can that cautiously.
That's what he's putting his money behind, folks. Yeah, that's the left turn Canada guarantee.
But yeah, right now the NDP has a big lead in Alberta polling. Not as big as a poll from last week, but a 12-point lead in Alberta, which is great to see. Saskatchewan just had an election, but the NDP has had a 12-point swing in their favor versus the Saskatchewan party, still down in that province. in Ontario, we had the aforementioned poll I just shared that has them within the margin of error of the Conservatives. Quebec doesn't have the NDP, but Quebec Solidaire is in third in that province, which is great to see. We support that Orange Party there as well. In Nova Scotia, the NDP has jumped 11 points to a solid 32, 10, 11 points ahead of the Liberals. So clearly in second, although again, they just had an election. And in New Brunswick, the NDP plus 9 in Newfoundland and Labrador, and plus 11 to 13 points in New Brunswick, my home province. So I think we can safely say that the NDP will be forming government in New Brunswick imminently.
Yes. Imminently, we
but
will
that is
see.
Big though. What one thing that's big, they are ahead of the Green. They are ahead of the Greens in this round of polling, despite the fact that the Greens have three provincial members of the legislature. So some good NDP polling, and also John Horgan and the BC NDP are polling well. They are down, but every other party is down as well. John Horgan hasn't been the best premier, but he is still leading. And a good poll for the Ontario, for the Manitoba NDP, now up 5 over the PCs. Election there actually coming up relatively soon. That's one of the more recent ones to come up, probably.
So there you go. Maybe, you know, well, this is at least there definitely seems to be some resonance with this idea. And I think it's something that we talked about very early on in the show. You need to kind of make a choice. We're seeing how the world is turning and what it's shaping into. This middle of the road neoliberalism will no longer work, and people are seeing the cracks. People have just fallen through. And I think there is that strong right wing base in this country that have found their answer. And I think we need to keep cultivating that left wing base in our country that has their own answer about humanism, about trying to work together in this idea that we can bring motherfuckers up. Like, we don't need to step on people's faces to get ahead. And after the couple years we've had here, you know, I'm hoping that message will resonate more. I'm hoping that we'll see Singh as a kingmaker. I'm really, this idea is, you know, knocking around in my head, and I'm liking it more and more. And I'm hoping on all hope, on the North Star in the sky that I see right now, that I will not have to motherfucking hear about the last name Ford here in Ontario in the next few years,
because
my whole fucking professional life,
it
has been these people.
There's a nephew. Isn't there like one of the nephews on city council?
Oh, that high voice motherfucker. I hate him.
Yeah, there's the daughters selling the CBD stuff. I could see them running.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
I think they could be our Trumps. In that, like, they will, we will never be rid of them.
All right, I'm ending it now. See you later, folks.
Okay.